Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, Pope Benedict meets with the College of Cardinals for a day of prayer and reflection on progress in ecumenical dialogue. And we talk with several of the English-speaking prelates who will be created cardinals in Saturday's consistory. And Lebanon's fate is in the balance as tensions are at their highest since Lebanon's civil war came to an end in 1990. What happens next as the country seeks a new president? Cardinals and soon-to-be cardinals have been gathering in Rome over the last few days for Saturday's consistory. On Friday, the Pope convened a pre-consistory round of discussions here in the Vatican on the life of the Church, and in their morning session, what has been described as a moment for prayer and reflection, the prelates focused on the status of the ecumenical dialogue between the Catholic and Christian churches. On the agenda, a review in particular of recent progress made between Catholic and Orthodox delegates at a meeting of their Mixed International Commission in Ravenna, Italy, this past October. Well, Cardinal Walter Kasper, president of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity, delivered Friday's keynote address on the status of ecumenical dialogue. He told Philippa Hitchin, head of the assembly, that he was pleased the Pope had chosen ecumenism as the theme of the day.
First of all, I was very happy and I'm very grateful that the Holy Father has chosen this theme. But the theme of this morning will be a report on the situation and a reflection on the ecumenical situation. This does mean the document of Ravenna will be one part, but it's not the whole. It will not be the basis of all this discussion. We will speak about the old Oriental churches, the Orthodox churches, the Protestant churches, and all these new Pentecostal movements. Ecumenism is a very large reality, but we are happy and grateful for this opportunity to discuss with all the cardinals from all over the world the very important issue of ecumenism, because ecumenism is a mandate of our Lord. It's not an option, it's an obligation for the Church.
Pope Benedict said it was one of his priorities when he came and took over at the beginning of his pontificate. Do you see this meeting, this pre-consistory meeting, as a confirmation of that?
Of course, it's a confirmation of what he said the first day of his pontificate, but in the meantime, he gave a lot of other signs. He meets very often delegations from Orthodox and non-Orthodox, also from Protestant churches, and all the people who meet him in audience, or as a general audience, or in private audience, are afterwards very much happy about this meeting and very touched and moved by it. And so I think the consistory lies on the whole line of the pontificate of Pope Benedict XVI.
Cardinal Walter Kasper is president of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity. Saturday, November 24th, Pope Benedict is due to create 23 new cardinals in a public consistory here in the Vatican. With the new cardinals, the Pope will bring the total number of members of the College of Cardinals to 202. 121 of the cardinals will be under the age of 80 and thus able to elect a new pope. On this program over the next 2 days, you'll be hearing from some of the English-speaking new cardinals. Today, we've crossed the spectrum from North America to Africa. Chris Altieri asked the Archbishop of Galveston, Houston, Texas, Daniel Di Nardo how he felt when he was told he would be raised a cardinal in Saturday's consistory.
Certainly it is, it's an honor, but it was a surprise, almost a shock for me when I received the phone call on October 15th, I guess that was, the Monday before the announcement. There has obviously been no history of the Red Hat in any diocese in the southern part of the United States. So such a great honor bestowed by our Holy Father, is it's great for the southern part of the United States and the Catholic population there, and it's great for Galveston, Houston, too. Galveston itself is the first diocese in the state of Texas. The name Houston was added around 1959, 1960. So to have this this honor bestowed on the Archdiocese is really great. People are very pleased and very happy.
The church right now, and this is, of course, a sign of the growth and the expansion of the church, that a diocese like Galveston, Houston is receiving the red hat, as they say. Can you talk a little bit about the growth of the church in your area of the country?
Sure. It is a growth that has been steady and at times in recent years almost explosive in the Southwest and in Texas. We have in Galveston, Houston, practically doubled in size in the last 20 years or so. So it is a very intense growth. That's owing to, obviously, immigration, and the presence of Hispanics are very strong in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. Also, the movement in from other parts of the U.S. and an extensive movement into the Galveston, Houston, Southeast Texas area. Of many other cultures. We have a large number of Nigerians in Houston, a large group of whom are Catholic. The same with Filipinos, Vietnamese, Koreans, Chinese. What we're watching is just a very great international growth in the city of Houston and environs. And that growth has been experienced in the Catholic Church, and this has been here in Houston and throughout, particularly throughout Texas, but I know it's true in other parts of the Southwest.
You said an international growth, and one might even say, in fact, a concrete expression of the Catholicity of the Church.
Would certainly agree with that. That's precisely what has become, because of the wide variety of being enriched by many cultures. The unity of the faith is all the more important, and that's what we emphasize in Galveston, Houston, as I know they do in other dioceses in the state of Texas.
And let's say, though, that this sort of growth must present, this Catholic growth must present some particular challenges. Can you talk a little bit about them and how you're dealing with this sort of growth? Because it's the, in one sense, it's the sort of problem that, you know, anyone would like to have.
Right. It is a problem you'd like to have, but it does create challenges. Some of them have to do with just the number of parishes. We are opening up a new parish within the next 3 weeks, but as my predecessor, Archbishop Fiorenza, used to say when I came 3 years ago, I could open up four parishes tomorrow morning if we had the resources, and also, and this is another issue for us, the sufficiency of the number of priests. One of my preoccupations, but also a good challenge, is to continue to work with our young people and in addressing the call for priestly and religious vocations. And that's something we're working on very extensively in Galveston, Houston. But I know that it's true also in Austin Diocese and San Antonio and elsewhere. So those are issue of challenges. Obviously, there are issues of expanding existing parishes in terms of their buildings. We are in an intense building program in Galveston, Houston, with new church buildings, because the current church structure is too small in light of the growth of the number of parishioners. So religious education, formation, those are all big issues for us right now.
Your diocese, the Archdiocese, is very much becoming, we were talking about it earlier, a universal church in microcosm. How do you see your ministry? You recently arrived as Archbishop of Galveston, and comparatively recently, and now you're receiving the cardinalate. How do you see your work there and the mission, your own personal mission and the mission of the church in Galveston, fitting into the universal mission of the church?
Well, I think one of the major roles of the local shepherd, the local bishop, is to preach and teach. And that means unpacking the creed, unpacking the gospel, witnessing to it in your preaching and teaching, sacramental life. I certainly consider that one of my major responsibilities and will continue to do that. Insofar as I now am going to be elevated to the College of Cardinals, the importance of our communion with the Holy Father and with Rome, and the ability to show that as a church we are unity in faith, is going to be very important in my work as both cardinal and archbishop in Houston and beyond. So it's the substance of the faith that is pretty crucial to me that we want to get through, and that involves a level of witness, that witness to various groups, and not even just within the church, but even beyond in the culture in which we live. So I see, it's going to be logistically challenging, if I could add a note of humor.
Cardinal-elect Daniel DiNardo of Galveston, Houston, Texas. Well, while a fast-growing multicultural church distinguishes the new cardinal's archdiocese in Texas, a similar situation can be seen in faraway Africa, where the church is young and vital, but where the crisis of vocations is less of an issue of concern. Coadjutor Archbishop John Njui of Nyeri had just been appointed Archbishop of Nairobi, Kenya, when he received news just days later that he was fast on his way to becoming a cardinal, too, in this very next consistory. He told Festus Tarawari of Vatican Radio's English for Africa program that the two appointments struck him like a thunderbolt out of a clear blue sky.
Definitely, it was quite heavy on me, because as you very well know, I was by then the coadjutor in the Archdiocese of Nyeri, where I had been for 5 years. And really trying to work together with my brother, Archbishop Nicodemus Kirima, who, when I went, was not really in good health. And then, you know, he improved quite a lot, and then all of a sudden he was again not well. So when I was asked to leave and he was not really in good health, you can understand that that was quite heavy on me. And then shortly after that, I was informed of my appointment as a cardinal. Again, it came like a thunderbolt, because those are not things that I ever dreamt about.
Because you were still awaiting, in fact, your installation.
My installation, yes. So it came really as something very heavy. But to be very honest, I accepted all this in the spirit of obedience. Because from the time that we were ordained as deacons and priests, and we dearly promise our obedience and to do the will of God. And that will of God, we normally would know it through the church, and we would know it through the authority within the church. So it was with this kind of spirit that
and
I accepted
it. Was your appointment received by the Kenyan people? Because we know you are the second cardinal in the history of the church in Kenya after Cardinal Maurice Otunga, who died in 2003. What was the reception?
I think it was received really very, very, very well. And my experience as I was going to Nairobi on that first, and then also the installation on the 1st of November was really very wonderful, let me put it that way. And because I think my appointment is not just as an individual, but I think it's something that is indicating the love the Holy Father has also for our country, Kenya, and also for Africa, for that matter. And also to think of me being appointed to really work with the Holy Father in his various activities and responsibilities. So I think it was received in a very good spirit.
And in fact, during your installation on the 1st of November, you called on the Catholic faithful to be more committed to their faith.
Yes.
And you addressed special issues, for example, special groups like the young people, the children, the parents.
Yes.
What are some of the challenges in the church in the Archdiocese of Nairobi today, and what prompted you to make this call?
Well, I think I was just trying to relieve that kind of insight manifested in the document of the Vatican Council, the Church in the Modern World. realizing that Kenya today, you know, is surrounded really with the various challenges, and which challenges affect all categories of people. So those words with which the document opens, that the church must constantly read the signs of the times, I thought that, well, it is important that we look at our country and what is really kind of happening. We know that the children today, more than ever before, you know, are surrounded by the various problems. We know that the youth are really also surrounded by so many challenges, so too the family and so on. So I was just indicating that, well, these are going to be my primary pastoral concerns, helping every category of people to kind of uphold its own dignity and identity. And guided by the respect and the love of God, we are sure that, well, we can be able to carry on with the clear image of the church.
Kenyan bishops brought their image of the church in their homeland here to the Vatican this month. Cardinal-elect Njue was one of those taking part in their ad limina visit, a chance, he explains, for the bishops of Kenya to share their personal experiences, the joys and sorrows of the Kenyan church, with Pope Benedict.
I think we have plenty of joys to share with the Holy Father with regard to the evangelization and the life of the church in Kenya, the vocations, and even the increment of the Catholics and so on. But we have also so many sorrows to share with him, be they on the political level, what we are going through and so on. Then also the question of these religious sects and so on, and which sometimes tend to kind of derail some of our Christians, indicating that, well, we have definitely to pay a particular attention to the issue of catechesis so that the faith of our people is strengthened and they are not kind of going to be shaken by the wind. Then there is also the question of poverty, you know, that affects quite a good number of our population and so on. So there are a number of things. My understanding is that, well, is an opportunity where we are able to share, and we are able then to kind of be advised and to be encouraged by the Holy Father and so on. And then, of course, meeting the various congregations and the departments where the issues that pertain to them, how they affect us and how they can help us to really move on and make the Catholic Church truly strong.
You mentioned the political atmosphere in the country, and yes, recently your Bishop's Conference, you are the president,
yes,
you issued a statement urging Kenyans to vote for good leaders,
yes,
and not to allow politics to divide them.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Could you elaborate on what prompted that statement?
Well, Kenya, let me say, in the last 5 years, since the current administration came up, we have experienced very wide open space for the free self-expression, and so a kind of a democracy. But we must also realize that, well, this sometimes has not been used in the right way. Some people have taken advantage of the attitude of our president. And so as bishops, we have seen situations where people probably have been misguided, you know, and probably given empty promises by those who may want to get seats and positions and so on. I think it was our responsibility to help the Kenyans to understand what elections are all about, that within the elections we are going to decide our destiny for the next 5 years. And that is very serious. So the power they have is precisely their vote. Now, in order to utilize that vote well, we trying to tell them, as you vote, look for people who have these qualities, because those are the people whom we think that, well, they can be able then to help you to uphold your dignity and your own identity and help you to kind of move on in the right way. We did not want the Kenyans to be taken for a ride by simply being given the promises. And especially with our experience of the past, particularly with regard to the youth who sometimes are being bought with a few cents, and they become those who are asked to carry out violence for one reason or another. So our pastoral letter really had that as the main aim, to educate the people. We made it very clear that as a Catholic Church, we are not allied to any particular party, but we have a duty and a responsibility to educate our people so that they can make responsible choices.
And of course, the church in Kenya stands out as a very good example of how, you know, bishops can come together to speak out against, you know, some of the plagues in a society. Yes. For example, there were recent clashes in Mount Elgon and other parts of the country.
Yes.
You know, and you also came out with a statement, you know, trying to talk about, you know, those issues and urging the government to address them.
Yes.
On your part, concretely, what have you been doing, you know, as a church to address those issues of land, of conflict?
Correct. As a church, first of all, of course, we are on the ground. We see what is happening. Even now, there are some areas, for example, where some people's properties have been burnt and they have had to leave their own areas. Now, this, to us, is very sad. And this is why we have been trying to say, let us try to accommodate one another. We need a nation which is united. And it was with this in mind that we have also been very much opposed to what they call Majimbo, is a kind of federalism. And we are saying, let the people be together first. Let them accommodate one another first, so that each one feels himself to be at home. No matter what place of Kenya one really is, one must feel that well is at home. And this federalism, we were fighting it because we were saying, in these circumstances, is it really kind of right to kind of say now these people, then they can now be able to manage their own things and so on? It would only increase. Some may read it as a creation really of hatred. So we have been very strong in saying, let our country be seen to be as a united country, a united nation. We can have the sharing of the resources, and in fact, that has already been started, because every constituency, for example, has been allocated so much money, and we are only saying, make the strategies and structures that will help this money to be controlled by the people themselves according to their own priorities. So this we shall continue, and there is no doubt about it, because we feel it is only in that way our country will remain united.
Archbishop John Adjoye of Nairobi, Kenya, will be officially created cardinal on Saturday. He was speaking there with my colleague Festus Tarawari of Vatican Radio's English for Africa service. Parliamentary elections for a new Lebanese president were postponed for the fifth time on Friday, plunging the country into an ever greater state of uncertainty. President Amir Lahoud's mandate expires at midnight Friday, but lawmakers will now have until November 30th, next Friday, to agree on a consensus candidate. Well, I spoke to Professor of International Relations at St. Joseph's University in Beirut, Khalil Karam, just after Friday's decision was announced.
Of course, everybody would have loved to see the elections finalized today, because everybody is anxious and everybody is afraid to have a republic without a president. You know, the president in Lebanon has also not a lot of power, but he is a symbol of the unity of the country. So I hope that the politicians will take advantage of the seven coming days to find a consensual candidate for the presidency, because in Lebanon it doesn't work but by consensus.
What happens next? As we know, the President Amir Lahoud's mandate actually is up at Friday the 23rd at midnight. So what happens constitutionally from now on until next Friday?
According to the paragraph 62 of the Constitution, the government of Prime Minister Fuad Siniora will be in charge for that period, the government, the Prime Minister and his ministers. This is the constitutional option.
Can you explain again what are the political rivalries at play here?
There are domestic politics regional politics, international politics. It's a bit complicated, but we still have faith that the Lebanese do not want the demolition of their country. So at the very end, they will arrive to a consensus.
What do you think, though, are the possible scenarios that could be played out over the next few days?
I think we will arrive to an arrangement, a package, where the President of the Republic, the new Prime Minister, and the ministers, there will be a kind of distribution between the coalition that forms the majority and the coalition that forms the minority. And this is logically what's going to happen.
So you think that that an election will actually take place in a meeting of parliament next Friday, the 30th?
I think so. Even earlier, if there is a consensus.
Now, we did hear that the Christian opposition leader, Michel Aoun, issued a last-minute proposal on Thursday as a way to end this stalemate. He was saying that he would withdraw his candidacy for president and would name a neutral candidate to serve a shortened presidential term. However, the majority rejected that proposal. What did the deal actually entail, and do you think that there is any hope that something like that might be reconsidered?
I think the General Aoun's initiative was made that chairs of the groups in the parliament can discuss it. I think there will be very tough negotiations in the coming days, and this paper will be on the table like other proposals. But at the very end, I think that everybody will agree on someone from the list of the patriarchs. We think that at the very end, the groups will agree on a candidate from the list proposed by Cardinal Sfeir.
Is the patriarch there in Lebanon? I haven't heard any news, actually, because, of course, here in Rome, we are having the consistory on Saturday, and Pope Benedict on Friday has met with the cardinals. He has decided to stay in Lebanon, is that right?
Yes. Yes, because of the critical situation.
Do you know whether the Patriarch will be arriving Saturday now here to Rome?
We don't know. He was supposed to leave, and he said that he is postponing. I might see him tonight, but I don't see that he feels like leaving in this situation.
Some people have been very concerned that what could happen in Lebanon is a situation where we have two governments, two presidents and two prime ministers and so on. Do you think that is a possibility still?
I don't think so. We have 7 days. It's more than enough to arrive to a consensus.
What do people feel on the street? Can you describe to me what Beirut looks like on Friday?
Empty. Empty. Plenty of soldiers, plenty of internal security forces. There is no tents, visible tents, and everybody was expecting something to happen today, and nothing happened, so people are frustrated.
Any fear of any of the violence that we've seen over the past couple
of
years?
I don't think so. I don't think so. The army is strong enough to stop anything.
Professor Khalil Karam of St. Joseph's University in Beirut. That concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.